The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We have a lot to get to on today's program. We'll continue on with our study where we left off yesterday with respect to persistence and endurance, staying true to God's way of life all the way through to the end. As Jesus said, it's those who endure to the end that are going to be saved. So that's coming up at the end of today's program. We do have a lot that we want to pack into this first segment, including Mike Pompeo's major announcement yesterday. We've got some sound bites of that coming up here in just a moment. And also, if we have time, we'll squeeze in a few more comments from the Attorney General from his speech on Friday. We got into that to some degree yesterday, but there's a good bit more that we could cover on that subject if we have time. And of course, we'll weave in some other themes along the way as well, including Donald Trump's war against the experts. All of that coming up here in the first segment. First, though, I just want to update you on the story we led with yesterday. The ongoing protests in Hong Kong, I guess the government has the last remaining protesters penned in at this university, Hong Kong University. About 100 protesters are still holding out. It says here the protest, this just gives a little context, this is from the AP. The protest took off in June over a proposed extradition bill that would have allowed suspects to be sent to mainland China for trial. Activists saw the legislation as part of a continuing erosion of rights and freedoms that Hong Kong was promised when Britain returned its former colony to China in 1997. So China made all of these promises. The Hong Kong handover, we wrote all about it back in the 1990s, 1997 to be precise. This was a prized possession of the British Empire. And now you look at what's been happening since June. They want to take people that are arrested in Hong Kong back to the mainland, back to China, where they would be tried. And of course, China is a communist state headed up by a dictator. There have been, I haven't seen stories, but there was a tweet even of these protesters being arrested and carted into a train and taken somewhere. According to the tweet, hopefully we'll see, you can see some of the footage there on the YouTube feed, but hopefully we'll get more information as to where these people are going. So many of them are young people. They've been arrested, taken off the streets. China's cracking down, of course, in this age of social media. They're trying to do as much as they can under the cover of darkness. Coming back to this AP report, it says protesters now want an independent investigation into police suppression of the demonstrations and fully democratic elections. That's what they're demanding, and China really hasn't budged much on these demands. It says finally about 200 of the 600 people who have left Polytechnic, that's the university, were under 18 years of age. It says the city agreed not to arrest them immediately, but Lam said they could face charges later. So in other words, what might happen once the dust settles and the world isn't fixing its gaze on what's happening in Hong Kong? Listen to this report from, this is a CNN reporter on the streets of Hong Kong.
These people who want democracy, many of them are young, John. They've only ever lived under the one country, two systems policy. And they feel that China is encroaching on their civil liberties. They have told me that they would rather die than live under China.
These are young people, and all they've ever known is growing up in freedom, the freedoms that they've enjoyed in Hong Kong. And now they see those freedoms taken away. And as that reporter said there, some of them would rather die than to live under this communist regime. This is, by the way, this is CNN when they actually do good work. When they send their reporters out and they report on events that are happening around the world, and they leave aside the political bias, this can actually lead to some helpful, useful reporting, some informative reports. That was a woman there on the streets of Hong Kong. Well, it's supposed to be handed over entirely to China by 2047, but as we're seeing, that's a long way off. And these freedoms are already disappearing. This was an exchange yesterday on Fox Business about these ongoing Hong Kong protests, clip 18.
The Chinese are also well aware that in today's connected world, especially a place like Hong Kong, rolling in the way they did into Tiananmen almost exactly 30 years ago is something that would absolutely devastate U.S.-China trade talks, Chinese diplomatic efforts, mm-hmm. and the upcoming Taiwan elections in January.
Even if it doesn't come to that, a repeat of Tiananmen Square, will Hong Kong, Dean, in your view, ever be the same?
No, I think that we have definitely crossed the Rubicon in that regard. Hong Kong police have used firearms in a way that has almost certainly sapped their credibility. The students, many of them, have become much more radicalized. And Beijing is looking at this, and it's almost certainly thinking to itself, if it's like this right now, what is it going to be like in another 20 years when Hong Kong fully reverts under right. PRC control?
So they're looking at what's happening now, saying this is not going to intensify over these next 20 years. As I say, whatever is done, however the crackdown happens, you can be sure it'll happen as much as possible under the cover of darkness. They don't want another Tiananmen Square, for sure. So we'll certainly keep our eyes on that, and we'll have to also just pull up some of those old articles, because we talked about this happening back in 1997. The whole world, we'll talk more about experts and their fantasies about the future and how that they nearly always, they don't turn out the way they envisioned it to turn out. Well, switching over to Israel, yesterday the United States announced to the world that it does not view Israeli settlements in the West Bank as a violation of international law. This puts the United States squarely at odds with the conventional view that Israeli settlements are somehow an impediment to the ever-elusive peace process. They're the problem, these so-called settlers living in Judea, Samaria, East Jerusalem. They're the problem, said Barack Obama and John Kerry. But not Donald Trump, and not Mike Pompeo, as you'll hear here in a moment. Carolyn Glick wrote that yesterday, what happened on Monday, what happened on November 18th, 2019, will long be remembered as a turning point in Middle East history. That's the significance in her mind. What a turning point. Here is U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo making the announcement just yesterday. Clip one.
Turning now to Israel. The Trump administration is reversing the Obama administration's approach towards Israeli settlements. U.S. public statements on settlement activities in the West Bank have been inconsistent over decades. In 1978, the Carter administration categorically concluded that Israel's establishment of civilian settlements was inconsistent with international law. However, in 1981, President Reagan disagreed with that conclusion and stated that he didn't believe that the settlements were inherently illegal. Subsequent administrations recognized that unrestrained settlement activity could be an obstacle to peace, but they wisely and prudently recognized that dwelling on legal positions didn't advance peace. However, in December 2016, at the very end of the previous administration, Secretary Kerry changed decades of this careful bipartisan approach by publicly reaffirming the supposed illegality of settlements.
So you remember, we talked about this at thetrumpet.com. That was the Obama administration's parting gift to Israel, to Prime Minister Netanyahu, where they had this resolution at the UN, and usually the U.S. would veto it and say, no way. But this time around, the U.S., the voice coming from the United States of America fell silent, and this resolution passed right on through. And John Kerry then got out and scolded Israel for all of these settlements. And there are quite a few commentators that talked about this is happening just a few weeks before Obama leaves office. And many commentators in Israel were saying, how could he stab us in the back like this? How could America, on the way out for this administration, how could they rebuke a longstanding ally in such a way? I think it was Prime Minister Netanyahu who called this abstention at the UN a shameful ambush. Here are all these Israel haters at the UN condemning Israel for all the illegal construction. And the U.S. just sits back and says, well, we agree. We agree with it. Carolyn Glick talking about this allegation or this abstention back in December of 2016. She said, this allegation has served as the justification for a continuous barrage of condemnations of Israel in the international arena and for anti-Israel legal verdicts in international courts. It's just been used as an excuse to barrage Israel with hate. And all of these international rulings, these anti-Israel legal verdicts, because there's an Israeli community tucked away somewhere in Samaria. Never mind all the Arab communities that are in Israel proper. It only works in one direction in the minds of these people who hate Israel. That was their parting shot, the Obama administration. And yesterday, Mike Pompeo said America's recognition of these settlements as being legal, entirely legal, that this was a repudiation of the Obama administration's failure to veto that UN resolution in December of 2016. He said it right there at the outset of the clip. We are reversing it. We're reversing the Obama administration's approach toward Israeli settlements. Pretty amazing. Are we seeing a clear change in direction for the United States of America? Something my father's talked about often. The Jerusalem Post this morning, it said, now when some European, it's quoting some Israeli diplomat, it says, now when some European diplomat says matter-of-factly that the settlements are illegal, Israel can reply, says who? And then point to the United States as one country that disputes that characterization. It says, in other words, what has long been a given, the illegality of the settlements, is suddenly no longer so. Suddenly, on a dime, it's reversed. A clear change in direction. There was another article at the Jerusalem Post that talked about Trump completing a fulfillment of prophecy, prophesied this action. I didn't actually read the article. Richard just told me about it. But to say the least, Israel's excited about this move. And Brad McDonald sent me another note about the possibility of a unity government being formed. Benny Gantz has been in discussion with Prime Minister Netanyahu for the last couple of days. I forget which article this comes from, but it says the Netanyahu-Gantz meeting apparently came at the request of Israel Betanyu leader Avigdor Lieberman, who has been mediating between the two men in hopes of brokering a national unity government. It says Netanyahu met with Lieberman for the second time in 3 days on Tuesday morning. It was a good and professional meeting, and the two of them will continue their efforts to form a unity government, they said in a joint statement. So the relations there appear to be improving between Lieberman and Netanyahu. And then if you bring Gantz into it, well, you've got all of a sudden, you've got a national unity government. You wonder if even yesterday's announcement from the United States will give some momentum to these discussions, as Israel's just basically been stuck in gridlock for most of this year. They haven't had a government, really. It's just been divided. They can't come together. Well, as I say, this is quite the boost for Israel to have the United States come out just yesterday to make this announcement. Here's more of what Mr. Pompeo said, clip two.
After carefully studying all sides of the legal debate, this administration agrees with President Reagan. The establishment of Israeli civilian settlements in the West Bank is not, per se, inconsistent with international law.
Pretty amazing. After carefully studying into it, after carefully looking into all the sides of this legal debate, we agree with Ronald Reagan. We agree with what Reagan did or said in 1981. What a clear change in direction for the United States, for Israel. Carolyn Glick says this: Pompeo made two revolutionary assertions in his statement. First, he said that after carefully studying all sides of the legal debate, like the Reagan administration before it, the Trump administration has concluded the establishment of Israeli civilian settlements in the West Bank is not per se inconsistent with international law. We just played that clip for you. He says, or she does. Second, Pompeo noted the near ubiquitousness of the false assertion that settlements are illegal has not advanced the prospects for peace. This has just been the conventional wisdom for experts. That the settlements, they're illegal, it's a problem, it's an obstacle. And yet just saying that for decades, what has it done for the region? Has it brought peace to the region? She says, to the contrary, it has harmed the chances of getting to peace. It's actually getting in the way. It says, in other words, calling the establishment of civilian settlements inconsistent with international law has not advanced the cause of peace. Well, to just sit on the sidelines as a so-called expert and to say, well, the problem is mostly the settlements. If it wasn't for the settlements, we could have peace. Well, what has that done for peace? Just criticizing Israel. It makes me think of this. One of the statements that he had, quite a few memorable statements out on the campaign trail back in 2016. But when Donald Trump was aiming for black voters, he looked at them and said, basically, hey, what do you have to lose here? You have to look at the black community in so many of these big cities and see that there's not a lot that the Democrats have done for you over the last several decades. Here's what he said in August of 2016, clip four.
Look how much African-American communities have suffered under Democratic control. To those I say the following: what do you have to lose by trying something new like Trump? What do you have to lose? I say it again, what do you have to lose? Look, what do you have to lose? You're living in poverty, your schools are no good, you have no jobs, 58% of your youth is unemployed.
Look at your living conditions. Look at your cities. Look at your schools. Look at the unemployment. Look at the poverty. And now the Trump administration says to the Middle East, or really more to the diplomats, the experts, the peace negotiators, what good has it done these past 20 or 30 years to go on and on and on about Israeli settlements? Have you brought peace? Have you brought some sort of solution to this ongoing struggle to find peace in the Middle East? Carolyn Glick says this, placing a lie in the center of the discourse on the Palestinian conflict with Israel is no way to promote understanding and coexistence. In the interest of promoting peace, Pompeo instead told the truth. Now, I'm not here saying that this is going to bring peace to the Middle East, but he did tell the truth. He did come in and tell the truth. President Trump, before the black voters in 2016, said, look, you're in a horrible situation, so many of you. And so many of you have been living under Democrat leadership for decades, and you continue to vote Democrat. What do you have to lose? Pompeo comes in here, and he tells the truth. Glick says, not only are Israeli settlements not illegal, Pompeo noted that they are arguably more justified than civilian settlements built in other disputed territories. Well, there's plenty of so-called settlements in so-called disputed territories all over the world. And it just so happens that Israelis, Jews, they've got quite a bit of history on their side with respect to that particular region. You look at Bible history, going back thousands of years, this was where they lived. This is where they came from. Glick says, in his words, the administration's determination is based on the unique facts, history, and circumstances presented by the establishment of civilian settlements in the West Bank. That is, Glick says, it is based on the historic ties of the Jewish people to Judea and Samaria. These ties lay at the heart of Jewish history and religion. It's refreshing. It's refreshing to hear someone who comes in not with the conventional wisdom that we've heard from experts for decades, but he comes in and he tells the truth. It's like my father said about another point that was made by the administration. You know, they say it, and you wouldn't think it's something that would even be controversial. But of course it is, because we're living in an upside-down world. Carolyn Glick says, Pompeo's statement, and indeed the Trump administration's decision to publish its position now, represents a complete rebuke of the European Union. It completely rebukes the Obama administration. It completely rebukes the radical left, the European Union, and even many of Israel's neighbors. Now that's, I think, fascinating, and I think also somewhat sobering, that statement there. Given what we know about prophecy, Hosea 5:13 says that wound, Judah's wound, it's going to cause little Judah to go to the Assyrians for help. When she discovers that her wound is incurable, she's going to reach out to Germany, not the United States, but Germany, for help. And that leads to a double cross. But that tells you something, doesn't it, about just how far we have to fall following this temporary resurgence. It's just very temporary. And right now you look at U.S.-Israeli relations and you see a strength there. Pompeo mentioned, we agree with what Reagan said in 1981. I mean, this is like a flashback almost. You never could have imagined this just a few years ago. But now we're in the midst of a temporary resurgence. But it is only temporary. You look at that same prophecy, Hosea 5, it talks about all of our nations falling together. Ephraim, Manasseh, Judah. For now, though, it is refreshing to hear to hear someone come in and say, you know what? Everything that's been discussed or debated over the past 30 years, it hasn't really worked. It just hasn't worked. So here's what we believe. We've looked at all of the evidence, or we've looked at everything that's debated. We've studied into this. We've carefully studied all sides, and here is what we have concluded. Well, there's a lot of experts that don't like that conclusion. Carolyn Glick says this is her conclusion. Pompeo's statement is first and foremost an extraordinary gesture of support for Israel and the rights of the Jewish people on the part of President Donald Trump and his administration. But from a U.S. perspective, it also represents a key advance in Trump's realist foreign policy. Notice her conclusion here. This is an advance of Donald Trump's realist foreign policy as opposed to the fantasist. She's talked about this before in some of her articles, but she concludes here, since taking office, Trump has worked consistently to align U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East and beyond to the world as it is, rather than the world as experts imagine it to be. So he goes in, like I said, he goes into that campaign rally in 2016, and he says, look, to you African-American voters, look at the world as it is. Would you say that Democrat leadership has helped you? Have they improved your schools? Have they pulled your communities out of poverty? He went in there and he saw the world as it is. A realist. Doesn't mean every decision or every policy he's established has been spot on. But it's a very different way to view the world. And he's got people in place like Pompeo, like William Barr. They're looking at the situation as it is. And they see a lot of problems that need to be fixed. My father said before about the Trump administration that he does a pretty good job of identifying the problems. She contrasts that with the experts who imagine it to be a certain way. The fantasists. Now, these really do clash, these two worldviews. They clash often, and that's why the Trump administration is just constantly battling against diplomats, agents, and experts who are embedded deep into the deep state. Individuals like these officials over in Ukraine that are now testifying against the president, they are deeply offended that the president would open some kind of a back channel entourage or a back channel group of diplomats that would dare take a different position than the Ukraine ambassador and all of her assistants. It's a constant battle against these experts who see the world not as it is, but as they imagine it to be. Listen to this exchange. This is also from Mike Pompeo. It's a different subject here, but at the end of, there's lots of criticism aimed at Pompeo right now because he heads up the State Department. And so these left-wing reporters are saying, where is he? Why isn't he defending the impeccable credentials and character of Marie Yovanovitch and the other ones that testified last Wednesday? They can do no wrong. They have a perfect track record. And in the case of Yovanovitch, she was fired by Donald Trump in April or May. And so here come these left-wing reporters saying to Mike Pompeo, how come you haven't defended her? You're the boss at the State Department. Why don't you stand up to Donald Trump? You would expect that from, as I say, a reporter. But with respect to that, the post there, the ambassador's post at Ukraine. And then, just with respect to Ukraine itself, listen to how Secretary Pompeo responds to this reporter's question. Clip 3.
There are a lot of questions about why you have not chosen to speak up publicly in defense of your employees, including those who testified before the impeachment inquiry. Can you explain why you haven't chosen to make comments in their support?
I'm happy to talk about Ukraine policy today. I'm not going to get into the issues surrounding the Democrat impeachment inquiry. Just not going to do it today. It is worth noting that Ambassador Yovanovitch's departure preceded the arrival of Bill Taylor. There's some ideas out there that somehow this change was designed to enable some nefarious purpose. You should all just look at the simple fact that it was
it was Bill Taylor that replaced Ambassador Yovanovitch, who in each case has been driving towards the appropriate Ukraine policy, which I'm happy to talk about. I'm proud of what this administration has done with respect to Ukraine. We reversed the massive failures of the Obama administration's policy towards Ukraine, which truly did risk the lives of Ukrainian people and allowed Vladimir Putin to take Crimea and to fight in the Donbas against a group of Ukrainians who wanted nothing more than to defend their nation, but were given just blankets and non-lethal equipment. I'm proud of what we've done. President Trump's policy has been consistent throughout. The State Department is fully supportive not only of what we've done, but our Ukraine policy moving forward.
So that's him coming in again to this subject and just simply telling the truth. You're not going to get this from reporters. So it's important that we listen in and take note here. He says, look, Trump came in and reversed the massive failures of the Obama administration, which did not supply Ukraine with any kind of military hardware, javelins, to repel the attacks from tanks coming from Russia. This is the world as you see it. This is what it was in 2014 when Russia just waltzed into Crimea and took it over. They seized control of it. And the Obama administration did nothing. Nothing. They gave them blankets. And Donald Trump comes in and gives them javelins. And he says, now to make sure, you've got to be sure you're eliminating corruption. Are you getting rid of corruption? Congress, after all, demands this. They're not going to just send out hundreds of millions of dollars to any old nation if it's just rife with corruption. So there's obvious some serious concerns because Ukraine's had a long history of corrupt politicians and diplomats. A long history of that. So that's someone coming in and telling the truth. Obama didn't provide military aid. He didn't do anything when Putin seized Crimea. Donald Trump's giving them the javelins that they need to fend off Russian tanks. He wants to clean up the corruption, so much so that he sent his personal attorney over there and an ambassador coming from Europe as well. But all the officials in Ukraine, in Kiev, oh, they don't like that at all, you see, because they have perfect, impeccable credentials. They know what needs to be done there. We've referred to this Politico story before. This one from January 11th, 2017. So you're talking just a week and a half before Donald Trump comes into office. And it says he wasn't the only presidential candidate whose campaign was boosted by officials of a former Soviet bloc country. It's referring to Russian interference. This Politico piece, which goes on for 16, 17 pages, it says that Ukraine meddled in the U.S. election. Ukraine, in 2016, there they were meddling in the election. And guess who Obama appointed as the ambassador to Ukraine in 2016? That would be this woman who, if you listen to the media, can do no wrong, Yovanovitch. Politico says Ukrainian government officials tried to help Hillary Clinton. Listen to this. Ukrainian government officials tried to help Hillary Clinton and undermine Trump by publicly questioning his fitness for office. They also disseminated documents implicating a top Trump aide in corruption and suggested they were investigating the matter, only to back away after the election. They backed way off after the election. But during the election, they came out with all of these corruption charges aimed at Paul Manafort. And he had to resign from the campaign. So this actually did influence the election. It impacted the election in 2016. Politico, this is from, I think his name's Peter Vogel. Can you see the name on the bottom of that? He now writes for the New York Times. Kenneth Vogel, there it is. He now writes for the New York Times. Politico's left wing. The Times obviously is left wing. And this is, they couldn't help themselves. They were just, it's like the wiretapping All those reports in the early part of 2017 where they kept saying the Obama officials or these officials were wiretapping Trump here or maybe at the Trump Tower as well. And then when a conservative comes along and says, hey, you're spying on Donald Trump. You're spying on a political opponent. Then they just scream. What are you talking about? You must be a conspiracy theorist. Here's another revelation brought on from a liberal organization. It says they helped Clinton's allies research damaging information on Trump and his advisors. That's according to a Politico investigation. All of this corruption, all of this meddling in U.S. election, even. Last week during Yovanovitch's testimony, she had an exchange with Jim Jordan, and he brings up all of this corruption, this political story, this investigation, and how much Ukrainian government officials wanted Hillary Clinton to win, and how that the ambassador to Ukraine did absolutely nothing to try to stop the meddling. This is clip 5.
Sir, should ambassadors ever try to influence host country elections?
No.
I think you said in your opening statement, partisanship of this type is not compatible with the role of a career foreign service officer. Is that right?
Yeah.
But that's exactly what happened in 2016. In August of 2016, the very month you went to Ukraine as our ambassador, the Ukrainian ambassador here in the United States, Ambassador Chali, wrote an op-ed in The Hill, said this, Trump's comments send wrong message. So the very month you're over there as our ambassador to Ukraine, Ambassador Chali writes that op-ed, and it wasn't just that attack, as Mr. Castor got into earlier, it wasn't just that attack on the president. We had former Ukrainian Prime Minister Yatsenyuk, who criticized candidate Trump. We had Mr. Avakov. I believe earlier you said, Ambassador, that Mr. Avakov was the individual who first alerted you to the efforts of Mr. Giuliani. Mr. Avakov, back during this same time period in the months just prior to the 2016 election, called then-candidate Trump all kinds of names, called him a terrorist. And, of course, we have Mr. Lushenko, a member of parliament, who was a source for Fusion GPS and the now somewhat famous dossier that flowed from Fusion's work. He said this in the Financial Times, again, in August of 2016, when you first arrived in Ukraine, he said this, the majority of Ukrainian politicians are on Hillary Clinton's side. So you had several high-ranking officials in the government, in the Ukrainian government, and President Poroshenko is president of Ukraine, criticize President Trump, then candidate Trump, all in the late summer and fall of 2016. What I want to know, Ambassador, when this was all happening, did you go talk to anyone in the Ukrainian government about this? Did you go say to some of these officials, hey, you guys need to knock this off. This perception that we got, as Mr. Lushenko said, the majority of Ukrainian politicians on Hillary Clinton's side, that's not good. Did you have that conversation?
No.
Didn't talk to anyone in the government? Did you talk to President Poroshenko?
No.
Didn't alert anyone in the government?
No.
No, she didn't do anything. She says she's been smeared by Rudy Giuliani, Donald Trump, Sean Hannity. And here they were, not just Ukrainian officials, U.S. officials. Let's be honest. Let's come in and tell some truth. U.S. officials in the Ukraine embassy who were smearing Donald Trump, who were doing everything that they could to help Hillary Clinton to win. She says there in her testimony from Friday, no, I didn't do anything. They were calling Donald Trump a terrorist. They were saying all of us in the Ukrainian political establishment, we want Hillary to win. Did you call up and say, hey, knock this off? There's a long-standing policy at the State Department that nations shouldn't meddle in the affairs, the political affairs of other nations. You shouldn't be smearing Donald Trump. She didn't say that because this is one of many Trump haters in the State Department. One of many Trump haters in the deep state. And if Donald Trump made a mistake, it was in letting her stay on for as long as he did. Barack Obama wouldn't have done that, as you heard yesterday. He would have fired her on day one. Trump reassigns her, basically says you can do whatever you want in D.C. So she gets a posh job at Georgetown University, still paid by the State Department. And yet you listen to the media coverage following Friday's testimony, and it's as if this woman has been dealt with in the cruelest of ways. People trying to smear her when it's exactly the opposite. The smearing, you see, it's A-OK. As long as you're smearing a woman who's more conservative, as long as you're smearing Fox News, as long as you're smearing any official in Trump's administration, and as certainly as long as you're smearing Donald Trump, smear away. Isn't it, you know, Sam brought up to me the other day, here are these people who've testified last week, all of them, talk about the corruption that they're still hoping will be rooted out of Ukraine. And you go back to 2016, this political piece from 2017, talking about all of this corruption, and yet they absolutely loved Hillary Clinton. Isn't it strange that these corrupt Ukrainian leaders would just be in love? Shouldn't it be strange? Why would they love Hillary Clinton? Why would they want a continuation of the Obama administration? Well, and here's where the president, again, he's ruffled some feathers because he's come in and he's exposed some truth. The truth about the vice president. The truth about all of this corruption, this corrupt company, Burisma. The truth about Hunter Biden making $50,000 a month from this Ukrainian company. And everyone at the State Department, everyone at the Ukrainian embassy, just turning a blind eye to it. In fact, Joe Biden bragging about it. He went in and got the prosecutor fired that was looking into Burisma there in the last year of the Obama administration. Isn't that astounding to anyone? Not in the mainstream media. They're the deep state. They're the State Department. And even though some of them have admitted in these testimonies that, well, yeah, I guess, you know, Donald Trump has helped the nation by sending in the javelins. And yeah, well, that's true. The Obama administration didn't do it. But still, you can feel it in their responses. Trump is the problem. Barack Obama could do no wrong, even though he was only sending blankets. Listen to what Attorney General Barr said on Friday. I know I played this for you yesterday, but just as a reminder, you see here what this administration is going up against. When you come in with a realist perspective, this is what's happening, and what's gone on three decades before hasn't worked. Well, those entrenched bureaucrats that have been there in some cases for the duration of that three-decade period, they don't like it. They don't like it when someone comes in and tells the truth. This is Bill Barr in his Friday speech at the Federalist Society, clip 6.
Immediately after President Trump won election, opponents inaugurated what they called the resistance. And they rallied around an explicit strategy of using every tool and maneuver to sabotage the functioning of the executive branch and his administration. Now, resistance is the language used to describe insurgency against rule imposed by an occupying military power. It obviously connotes that the government is not legitimate. This is a very dangerous and indeed incendiary notion to import into the politics of a democratic republic. What it means is that instead of viewing themselves as the loyal opposition, as opposing parties have done in this country for over 200 years, they essentially see themselves as engaged in a war to cripple by any means necessary a duly elected government.
And this president has faced that war, that insurgency, in a lot of areas, and certainly what he announced yesterday regarding Israel, that's not going to win. That's not going to win over a lot of these so-called experts who see the world as they imagine it to be. Barack Obama was just making things better in Ukraine, don't you know? Well, it's the resistance is in fact an insurgency, a coup, and it's very, very dangerous. My father, remember going back to Great Again, and then even before that, America Under Attack, he talked about how under the previous administration, how quickly America was moving toward rule by dictatorship or tyranny. And you could have read that several years ago and thought, well, surely that's an exaggeration. Were we really that close to rule by dictatorship or tyranny? Listen to what Mark Levin said on his radio program just last night, clip 16.
I am deeply hopeful this president wins re-election because he is what stands between us and tyranny. Forget about the propaganda, the websites, all the rest. He is what stands between us and tyranny.
That's a Jeroboam type leading a temporary resurgence. Do you realize, my father wrote, how deadly dangerous this trend of lawlessness is? Very few people do, but it gives insight into the real nature of the threat facing America. This is quickly moving America toward rule by dictatorship or tyranny. When we come back, we'll have to condense our Bible study for the day. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Don't forget to visit our website at thetrumpet.com. Every day, thetrumpet.com will help you understand your world by analyzing today's headlines under the clear light of Bible prophecy. Log on to thetrumpet.com and sign up for our daily Trumpet Brief email and subscribe to the Trumpet magazine. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
More than anything else, this spiritual race that we're in, it's a test of endurance. A test of endurance. It's not so much where we are as we sit or stand here today, or even where we'll be tomorrow, but where will we be several months from now or a few years from now? Where will we be when Jesus Christ returns to this earth? Will, as I've said before, will we be ready for that? Paul says in 1 Corinthians 9 and verse 24, "Know you not that they which run in a race run all, but one receives the prize?" It says, so run that you may obtain. Run, strive to win even. But make sure that you run. I love this passage because of how positive Paul is, how confident we have to be. Don't take a defeatist approach. Don't be negative. Go forward. Hebrews 12, 1 and 2 bring this out as well. Go forward with Christ. Verse 25, it says, "And every man that strives for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible." So we're like athletes in training. Spiritually, we're in training, preparing for our future in God's kingdom, in God's family. Everyone who's competed, a lot of us did when we were younger, in junior high or high school, or maybe an intramural league of some kind. I guess intramurals isn't always the best example. But if you're in a more competitive league of some kind, you really do have to train and work to be able to get some playing time. I've told the story before when I was 19 and ran the Los Angeles Marathon, how that in going in, there were 10 of us from AC that ran in that race. And I had never done it before, but the way I was training myself was that I just have to finish this. I guess I won't say I didn't have any goals as far as the time of it. I wanted to get somewhere around 8 minutes per mile. I don't think I quite got to that level. But the biggest goal that I had was that I want to finish. I've just got to finish this. And, you know, of 20,000 runners in the Los Angeles Marathon, only half finished. It was just astounding to me that a lot of people didn't get very far. Thousands, in fact, dropped out of the race. Half the people. Spiritually, the numbers are far worse. 95% of God's people have stopped running in the race. They've just drifted away from God. They pulled over to the side and said, "That's okay. I don't want to go any further." We absolutely have to finish. We have to think with the kind of positive, confident attitude that Paul's talking about here in 1 Corinthians 9. There's no doubt about it. We must finish. Verse 26, "I therefore so run, not as uncertainly, so fight I, not as one that beats the air, but I keep under my body and bring it into subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway." So Paul brought his body, his mind and his body, into subjection with God's help. He made his body, Jesus Christ's slave, in fact. He really did work to overcome, to come out of sin, to train for his future. I mentioned that passage in Hebrews 12. Let me just read it to you. Hebrews 12 and verse 1, it says, "Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us." You see, run with patience. Be consistent. Put in a consistent effort every day. And of course, if you can lay aside those weights, that's what sin is like. It's like wearing ankle weights in the midst of a marathon that slows you down. Lay aside those weights so that you can really run fast, so that you can really go forward. It says in verse 2, "Looking unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God." Look to Jesus Christ. You have someone that you can, it's like in a car race where you've got the pace setter out front. First Peter 2 talks about following in his steps. Look to Jesus Christ. Follow him through any trial or test. Walk by his faith. And he'll, like I played for you last week, he'll lead you where you need to go. Verse 3, it says, "For consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest you be wearied and faint in your minds." Consider him. Consider what sin did to Jesus Christ. Consider how much he struggled to overcome and to conquer sin. Consider how much he went forward in following and obeying God. It says in verse 4, you have not yet resisted unto blood, striving against sin. None of us have committed our lives to God the way that Jesus Christ did. He literally poured out his blood, resisting against sin in service to God. Surely all of us can put forth just a little bit more effort and training, preparation, overcoming in this spiritual race that we're in. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.